five-time batting champ Wade Boggs and former Chicago Cubs second baseman Ryne Sandberg got their tickets to Cooperstown today. Boggs' plaque in Baseball's Hall of Fame will cite more than 3,000 hits, a couple of gold gloves, and a World Championship. Ryne Sandberg, once the National League Most Valuable Player. But as usual, the annual Hall of Fame election sparks as much controversy as celebration. If you have questions about who made it and who didn't, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us an email, totn@npr.org. Our baseball pal Alan Schwarz fueled some of this year's controversy with his columns in the Sunday New York Times. Alan's on jury duty at the moment and joins us from a phone booth outside the waiting room on Center Street in Manhattan. Good to talk with you again, Alan.
Oh, it's good to be here, too, and not sitting in the holding pen.
We're just glad you didn't get called into a case. But before we get to the controversy, let's talk about Wade Boggs for a minute. Over the years, the value accorded to many statistics has changed in baseball. 3,000 hits, though, was enough to get Boggs elected in the first year he was eligible.
Well, yes, that still remains a magic number. For all the advances that have been made in understanding statistics, whether it's on-base percentage or slugging percentage or some of the other more newfangled widgets that the scientists have come up with, 3,000 hits still is an elite enough achievement that it gives you pretty much automatic inclusion into the Hall of Fame. I believe that enough understanding has been made where if Rafael Palmeiro, say, were to get 3,000 hits, he still wouldn't be a shoo-in. Boggs was not necessarily a shoo-in. More scrutiny was given to other statistics. I think that's a good thing. I think that basically we've added the level of scrutiny afforded any statistic, not just one.
And home runs, 500 home runs, was previously considered, such a golden plateau that it ensured enshrinement in Cooperstown. Now, maybe not so.
I agree. I mean, and in part because getting a home run now is easier than it used to be. Fred McGriff has almost 500 home runs. Most people, 30 years ago would have thought if somebody had 500 home runs, or even 489, or whatever this fellow has, he would definitely be in the Hall of Fame. But you have to keep shifting your standards by virtue of what era the player is playing in the same sense that pitchers no longer have to get 300 wins in order to get consideration for the Hall of Fame. I mean, if Randy Johnson or Greg Maddux or even Tom Glavine, gets 278, say, he's still going to be considered for the Hall of Fame at a time when, 50 years ago, 300 wins was very much the magic mark.
Well, now let's get to the argument that you and others make on behalf of two relief pitchers, Goose Gossage and Bruce Sutter. Sutter, by the way, finished third in this year's balloting, and I'm just looking at the wire here. He needed 344 votes, or he got 340 votes, up from 301 last year, 43 shy of what he needed for election. I'll play devil's advocate for a minute and argue first that specialists like relievers and designated hitters don't belong in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I think that's a perfectly understandable feeling. I didn't necessarily, in my New York Times story a few days ago, say that Bruce Sutter and Rich Gossage should be in the Hall of Fame. I only brought forth greater evidence to suggest that their jobs are considerably harder, or were considerably harder, than those of the relievers that we take for granted today. Most people of the past 10 years, ever since Dennis Eckersley, who I might add is in the Hall of Fame, are used to seeing closers pitch only one inning at a time. And usually, they're up by one or two runs, they get three outs, and that's that. For that, they get a save.
Dennis Eckersley, you, among others, have pointed out, got 149 wins before he became a relief pitcher.
Yes, so his candidacy was a little more muddled. Was he a starter? Was he a reliever? In this case, he was both. Raleigh Fingers is a pitcher, a full-time reliever, who has gained induction into the Hall of Fame. In fact, is really the only reasonably modern reliever only to gain enshrinement. And that's in large part because people dismiss statistics for relievers these days, because saves, the only statistic with any sort of currency, saves are very easy to get these days, and they're not particularly remarkable. Well, in fact, in the 70s, when saves were not nearly as easy to get, when relievers like Sparky Lyle, Dan Quisenberry, Quisenberry was more in the 80s, but Bruce Sutter and Rich Gossage in particular, these guys would pitch two, even three innings a game, often in non-save situations. The game was tied, and they were required to come in at a time when the reward, which we now take for granted, was not available to them. And so you need to look deeper. You need to look at what situations did these guys enter, and then how did they perform. And when you do that, you can see that the performances of Sutter and Gossage, their value is not reflected in the statistics that most people look at. they need to look at more than just saves and save opportunities.
One of the things that you pointed out in the column is that the ability to look back into the play-by-play accounts of baseball games shows that pitchers like Gossage frequently came in very tight situations as opposed to starting the ninth inning with nobody on base.
Exactly. I mean, these guys, the Suters and the Gossages and you know, Dan Quisenberry's who followed them, these are guys who came in the seventh inning if they were necessary at that time. And they would pitch 7, 8, 9, 10, or 11 outs at a time. Whereas now, if a closer comes in with one out in the eighth, it's news. Are you stretching him too far? I mean, when Eric Gagne, who is the elite closer for the Dodgers right now, saved something like, or converted something like 82 consecutive opportunities, save opportunities, most of the time he pitched only one inning and was up by one or two runs, and there wasn't a whole lot of pressure on him. Then, of course, when he pitched three innings in a game in August, there was all sorts of controversy that, hey, you're stretching him too far, you're going to hurt his arm. And in fact, he didn't pitch particularly well, or certainly not like Eric Gagne, the rest of the season. Relieving has changed, and I think that the great relievers of the past, specifically Suter and Gossage, are being dismissed because of how closers are being used today, and my story tried to highlight that these guys from the past had considerably more difficult jobs.
We're talking with Alan Schwarz. His book is The Numbers Game, Baseball's Lifelong Fascination with Statistics. We're discussing who is and is not in the Hall of Fame and why. It's sort of a national holiday for seamheads, the expression people use for statistical fans of baseball. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get some callers involved in the conversation. By the way, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. And Paul is with us on the line from Minneapolis.
Hey, good afternoon, Mr. Schwarz.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine. You know, a lot of talk, of course, about people that we all feel should be in the Hall of Fame. Without getting into a rant about it, just quickly, I got a person I think should not be in the Hall of Fame, should be expelled from it. Judge Landis.
Kennesaw Mountain Landis, the first commissioner.
Of the whole thing about tossing those people out of the game, even though a jury found them not guilty.
Now, this is to do with the 1919 Black Sox scandal.
That's what I'm talking about, yes. Basically, I just don't feel that anybody, regardless of their appointment to a position and regardless of the circumstances that they were and his well-known imperious demeanor, should be able to overrule the Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution. I think he should be out of the hall. Comments?
Well, of course, I mean, without becoming a constitutional scholar, which I am not, certainly the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution applies only to the state and to the federal government. Baseball can do whatever it darn well pleases, and always has and always will. I think also an argument, you know, that makes Judge Landis not look particularly elite is the fact that he did whatever he could to keep African Americans out of the game.
Oh yeah, that too.
And,
sure, that too.
You know, that certainly doesn't make him particularly palatable in most modern minds. That being said, you also have to remember, though, the way the Hall of Fame worked in the 40s and 50s, when Judge Landis and many other people were elected, is was just this honorary title given to almost every commissioner. Almost every commissioner. Has made the Hall of Fame, or at least those before, I guess, Bowie Kuhn and Spike Eckert, who preceded Kuhn. And these guys were just overlords and respected by the Taylor Spinks and by all the people in the media who really ran the Hall of Fame and ran the voting. And, you, of course, I know you meant that all sort of in jest, kicking him out. I think more important than kicking him out is understanding why, and calls like yours make that possible.
Paul, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Dan, and Dan's calling from Kalkaska, Michigan.
Hi there.
Hi.
My comment is in regard to the infield duel from the Tigers, who, when they were eligible, got almost zilch for votes, and that was the Whitaker-Trammell.
Alan Trammell, I guess, especially.
And, you know, both of them had outstanding careers, and maybe not the top in their position during their time period, but they played 17 years together, was definitely one of probably the top duels in the sport of baseball. And it just seemed to me that kind of durability
ought to be rewarded in some sense. Alan Schwartz, in a sense, is Alan Trammell being punished for, the position has really changed shortstop since he played?
No, I don't think he's being punished at all. I mean, I think that those are words. I understand why they're used, but they are misused. There is no dishonor in being called a very, very good baseball player, one of the best of all time, which Alan Trammell and Lou Whitaker were. But to call them Hall of Famers is an entirely different thing. And in my opinion, now I don't have a vote, but I certainly can echo the thoughts of many voters, these guys were not elite enough to be put among the Cal Ripken soon going to be in the Hall of Fame. Ryan Sandberg is in the Hall of Fame. If you look, Lou Whitaker is not really that good. He was very good, and he meant a lot to Detroit, and he and Alan Trammell staying together for those 17 years meant a lot to Detroit and to baseball. But to mean that they should be put among the Joe Morgans and other immortals, that's taking a leap that many people, including me, are not comfortable with. But it doesn't take anything away from what they did and what they meant to Tigers fans.
Dan, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Alan, maybe you'll get picked for a jury yet.
I hope so.
Alan Schwartz, a senior writer for Baseball America, among his many other jobs. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.